G'day, ladies and gentlemen. It's Sammy Gordon here, your host of Scouting Australia podcast.
Great to have you back here and back on the show. Loving it as always. And I get to welcome back my favorite co-host, Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim, looking sharp as ever, mate. How are you?
Thanks, mate. I thought I'd go with the bit of a fresher look. You know, summertime, white against the paley Melbourne skin.
You failed that one, buddy. We'll get a little bit of tan if you want to go for the
You got to get a bit of a tan. Yeah, that's why I've come up to the beautiful Gold Coast. Good to be here. How are you?
Great to have you here. Mate, I'm awesome. I'm great, mate. Coming into the end of the year. It's a great old time, mate. It's beautiful.
Isn't it?
Mate, it's amazing.
Mate, I am super pumped because the podcast is really taking off. Things are going well. I'm happy for you. Has it turned out how you expected it so far?
It's awesome, mate. It's fun. You know, the whole idea of this thing was giving back and providing a bit of content in an entertaining fashion. And I think your fashion is very entertaining. So I think we're delivering on that. I think people need to check out the videos of this fella. But no, man, it's awesome. I'm absolutely loving it. Getting some great feedback, great response. And mate, I just hope we can just keep delivering some really, really good value moving forward.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. And it's been great to see the actual questions about topics. Topics that we're going to discuss. Because I know the first few episodes, and obviously there've been quite a few now, we've hit some of the high notes, but it's good to see a different perspective. And I think that's what was one of the objectives. You really wanted to get the audience to have their say.
Definitely.
And to find out what the pulse is around Australia.
Mate, I was very blessed with all my magazines back in the day. They used to read back to front, I guess, so many
property magazines?
Yeah. Oh, mate. Yeah, obviously that's where I got all, I gleaned so much information from and was able to build my strategy and formulate my strategy. And I just don't feel like there's as much content out there that really delivers like objective views of what people are trying to deliver, I guess. So, yeah, man, that's what this is all about, and I'm loving the feedback, loving putting it out and doing it with you as well, man. So it's
awesome.
Let's crack on.
Crack on. So what are we talking about today,
mate? We normally have a topic that we're running with today that's been requested or crafted out or whatever, but Mr. Producer Tommy has done a Houdini on us. It's all missing, and apparently we're on a Q&A session because the questions are banking up and the people want to know. They're banging down the door with the pitchforks and the axes, and they want some answers to some questions,
so
mate.
What is going on here? I've flown up, prepared for our topic, and we've just done a lastminute.com switch up.
Yeah, we have, mate. We have. So
all right.
I've just got to run with it.
Fair enough. All right. It. Well, luckily we did. Well,
we have got some questions.
We do have some questions, but for the audience out there, we haven't prepared answers to these. So Tommy literally gave it to us a few minutes ago before we started. So are you ready to go? Because I'm going to fire them straight at you.
Let's go. Are we doing them? We'll both answer or just me?
Well, you're the expert.
Let's go.
Yeah. You're here for the knowledge. I'm here for the looks. So we might as well together.
You're here for the entertainment, like the funny looks, mate. That's about it. Come on, let's be honest.
So the first one
How old is Jimmy?
I don't think that's the first one is from Sharon.
Okay. Shazza.
Shazza.
Thank you for the question, Sharon.
Thank you. And this is addressed to you specifically, She says, I'm looking to invest in Southeast Queensland.
Okay, Sharon.
There's so much data out there and sources of information that I quite simply can't keep up with it. Firstly, how do you know what information out there is true?
Ooh.
And how in the world do you manage to process it all and portray the information to people, especially when everyone's scenario is a so-called case-by-case basis?
That's a big one.
That's a big one. That's a hard hitter.
That's a loaded question.
No wonder Tommy's...
Straight off the bat.
Straight off the bat.
She's trying to stump me.
She's trying to stump me.
Shut up. Mate, trying to stump me on the first question.
Well, I actually did ask people to stump Sammy and you might have just... Mate, take your bat and ball.
Mate.
Open it. It's a golden duck, this
come
one.
On, mate. Come
don't
on, mate.
Stall.
Wow.
Mate, you got to get into it. Don't delay.
Waterhead. Anyway, moving on. Look, selecting a location, and I think when it comes to case by case, it really does come down to what you're trying to achieve. So, like with Sharon's particular situation, I think is the first question I'd be asking is Southeast Queensland actually the right market for her to be looking into? So, running into it and looking at it from a bird's eye view at the moment, from a macro level, you look at a market like Southeast Queensland had exceptional growth over the last 2 years, probably up to the second quarter of 2022. It had an exceptional run and a really, really good run of growth, right? From the start of COVID pretty much till then, huge amount of people relocating from Sydney, Melbourne, you know, relocating up and putting a lot of extra money into the economy and willing to pay, you know, overs to try and secure a house for themselves there. There was also a lot of like stock tightened right up from that as well. And a lot of people trying to buy their own homes up here. So stock tightened up, you know, prices started to move. So you had a lot of investors moving into the market as well. So it really created a big feeding frenzy where the market went crazy. I know a lot of the properties that you own, a lot of properties that I own and others that I know out there as well, literally doubled in a 2 year window. So the question that I'd really be asking Sharon on this is kind of looking at her portfolio, which obviously I don't have the benefit of being able to look at that now, or her current situation even, and look at, is it the right market for her to actually be investing into at the moment? When I weigh up markets, I'm always assessing affordability. So there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different indicators to be able to look and check and we're very blessed that the 2021, census data is out. So we've got a lot of statistics and everything available to us right now that has been outdated for the past 5 or 6 years. It's now extremely current. You can check all that sort of data out. That's literally suburb by suburb data on median incomes, house prices, you know, all that good stuff. What are people doing? What do people do for work in that area? You know, all that sort of stuff comes from that census data. And we're, yeah, like I said, mate, very, very fortunate that that is extremely up-to-date information. When you look at the annual average growth rates as well that's been happening and the amount of growth that's been coming in, again, this is where I'm kind of coming back to, is it the right market for it? Because it's already had a huge amount of growth. I think there's a lot of other markets that you could potentially look at before Southeast Queensland, when Southeast Queensland is probably going to go through a bit of a bottoming this year coming in 2023. I think it's going to plateau out a bit. It's already come back a bit from that second quarter of 2022 into where we are now. It's already come back a bit and I think it's got a bit further to go. So my advice to Sharon would actually be to more than likely look elsewhere, weigh up some other options and see what actually might fit the bill. Because I don't think, you know, if we're talking right now, regardless of whereabouts you are in the portfolio, there's different strategies that actually still work really well there. There are still some strategies we're executing in there, but they're slightly different, more of a, you know, creative manufactured sort of style strategy that you know quite well that we're putting into place in that market. But for the most part, I think from a growth level and affordability level, I do believe there's better options out there at the moment. And I mean, if you're talking about, you know, info where you can trust that specific info, like you're asking about there, that is literally like government data that's released from the census data. So it's pretty close to being as accurate as we can get across the board.
So is it irrespective of her current situation? Because I know obviously we're talking about Southeast Queensland. Yep. So taking into her consideration, if she needed a really high cash flow deal, would that market be an option? Or is it because it's had so much growth? Or is there a better market out there that would deliver that?
I think that, like, again, it depends on what she's really chasing.
So it's really hard to know without knowing her details.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. It's a little bit harder with questions like that around that. When it comes to cash flow, there's always ways to manufacture great yields, right? So, like, there are opportunities within that market that she could push if she had the capital. But again, you go back to, well, are there other markets that are lower in the cycle that she could achieve similar cash flows from but get better growth in that short to medium term as well? So that's probably the way I'd be looking at it.
So it's the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
You could make it work, but again, if we are looking to maximize every dollar that we've got, you got to ask yourself. And I'm guessing that she's actually from Southeast. Do you think she?
Probably, yeah.
She might be in the area.
There's a lot of people that still think it's got a lot left in the tank. And I do think it does over the long term. You know, you got a lot of projects, a lot of things coming up in the next 10 years up to the Olympics. But at the same time, I think that market is still in for a little bit of a hurt because it's got a little bit of a shock to come with the way the interest rates have gone. And I do think there's going to be opportunities there. If she's obsessed with the market and really wanting to get into it, find the right pocket that's going to deliver what she's chasing.
Yep.
Make sure it's not at an unaffordable level, because if it's at an unaffordable level and interest rates keep rising or hold steady at these very, you know, quite high rates that we're at the moment, those markets will pull back a little bit before they start their run again. So if she can learn that market intimately, that where she really, really wants to buy, she may have the opportunity to, and especially networking with agents, especially when there's less competition on the ground, she might be able to pick herself up a bargain if she's dead set on Southeast Queensland.
Okay. Question for you. With Southeast Queensland, obviously there's been a lot of migration up from Melbourne, Sydney, up to Queensland. Mm-hmm. But is it fair to say that a lot of those people haven't gone to live in Southeast Queensland? So, and I know when we talk about the Australian property market, there's thousands of different markets, sub-markets.
Yep.
If all of those people have flooded into the sunny coast or into Brisbane itself, is that just a natural flow and effect of supply and demand filtering down into that corridor?
Well, you know, when you're talking Southeast Queensland, you're talking sunny coast, Brizzy, Gold Coast, right?
Are you talking, I'm talking.
Southeast Queensland is considered essentially like that golden
triangle. Oh, okay. So we're talking coast, all the way down. I'm talking Southeast.
No. Southeast Queensland is your sunny coast to Goldie out to Toowoomba. I kind of call it like the golden triangle.
Okay.
That's your Southeast corner of Queensland. Remember, Queensland is a freaking enormous state.
Of course.
It's a tiny little, you know, 2 hour split between those, each of those key points. That's your Southeast Queensland. And that is where the bulk of the migration has gone.
Okay.
Yeah, there has been plenty into some of the other regional pockets all the way up the coast. But the bulk has been, it's like, man, you hit the nail on the head. You got your sunny coast, Goldie, and Brizzy as well. That has seen the bulk of that migration.
So then even if we are talking about that, I mean, that's quite a large area in itself, right?
Huge.
So you can't just put a blanket, you know, from the sunny coast to obviously south of Brisbane. Mm. It's really difficult.
The funny thing is, though, the projects that are coming through from the Olympics, a lot of people don't realise stretch from the sunny coast to Toowoomba. And to the Goldie and everywhere in between. So spreading the love, giving a bit of a massage all across the board. But there's going to be opportunity there, and there's going to be different projects that pick up different things. But it's just weighing up the right time to kind of re-enter that market to optimize it. You can buy in and you probably buy a little in a dip, and she'll come back. But it's timing wise, could you get a better deal?
Because it's fair to say in Brisbane, I mean, so a lot of those markets that you were buying in were flat for a good 5 to 10 years before that.
Longer.
So if we're going to go into another period of that potentially, do you want to be exposed to that market?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was a big reason. I remember you questioning me about it when I put you in for multiple deals in Southeast Queensland. You're like, mate, it hasn't grown for,
Put you on the gorilla for a little bit.
Yeah, mate. It was like a George Foreman out there, you know, like, but it was a solid like 10 to 12 years where it was more, it was 12 plus years that it had been since it had growth. That, if anything, was a good indicator of a bit of change kind of coming through that market.
All right. Well, hopefully, Sharon, Shazza, that we answered that for you. Was that all right, Tommy? You happy with that?
Thank you, Sharon. I appreciate the contribution.
All right.
I hope we answered it quality enough for you.
I think you did. You did well.
Thank you.
I think, is it your
turn? Oh, yes. Sorry, mate. I've got a couple of questions.
Or are you just talking?
What a head. All right. Big Ross, a.k.a. Roscoe.
Roscoe.
G'day, boys. This is a cheer up and a half. G'day, boys. First up, Jimmy's age is definitely 37. He's one of those younger silver dogs. He's called you a dog. I'd call you a silver fox. I'm not a silver dog.
Jeez, is there such thing as a silver dog?
Well, probably has unicorn blood. He's pulling it out. He's going all stops. Well, all right, sorry. I'll read that again. G'day, boys. First up, Jimmy's age is definitely 37. He's one of those young silver dogs, probably has unicorn blood. I've got quite a bit of cash saved up, slash just came out of a business deal, which I've sold up. I'm looking to tie all my money into property. Is it worth buying 3 or 4 properties at the same time? Is that even possible? Just found you boys on this potty and loving the stories. Keep it up, boys. Jimmy, Matt, I'm going to leave this one a little bit with you because this is actually very relevant to what you did.
Is it the silver dog comment or is it the...
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, rebuttal on the silver fox. I don't believe you can answer the question.
Well, I'm not, yes, I appreciate the 37. I'll take that.
Wow.
Sounds pretty good. I'd be happy
That's
with
a
that.
Pretty solid indicator that you are over 37.
Maybe, maybe not.
To take but, that.
You know, age is just a number. thanks, Roscoe. So it's actually it's an interesting question that he saved he's got quite a bit of cash from a business deal. So obviously, I can relate to that in a way that I had a decent amount of cash. Well, not a huge amount, but when I first came across you and we were talking about the different types of strategies. So for me personally, I'll be interested to see what yours is. Yep. And it's fair enough if he wants to deploy that into property. But in terms of trying to buy 3 or 4 properties at the same time, my personal opinion would be, what is the rush to do that? So I would be more inclined to say, obviously get your strategy done first.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's test the market, get your first deal in. Maybe you get pre-approved or get them lined up, but start drip feeding your money into the market. Mm. Get the first deal in, get some runs on the board, get your confidence in, and then you can pull the trigger. And as we've identified with the previous podcasts, you can actually, the snowball effect doesn't take long to really come into effect. But if you do get it wrong for whatever reason, it can put you back.
Yeah.
So my personal opinion would be, first of all, what's the rush? You're not going to miss out.
Mm.
Let's do the first deal. Let's do that one right. Let's get the maximum value out of it. And then once you see it for your own eyes, get the right deal, then we can progressively, roll out the others in a faster succession.
Yeah.
That would be my personal opinion.
Okay.
Based on my experience. I mean, I could have done the four deals straight away, right?
Well, you did do two and two.
Well, I did two, but then they were following each other.
Yes, but they were still two and two.
But I still remember actually the very first deal I did, I was a bit cautious on it, looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
I remember. So we had to run it through and are you sure?
Yep.
As soon as the first one and I was in, then the others the others were very easy.
Yeah.
Because the great thing about, especially with the deals that we do, Australian Property Scout, is that you know what the numbers are going to be before you've actually done the deal.
Yep.
You know, with the cash flow forecast.
Yeah,
so you've got a lot of confidence straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
But at first, just to pull the trigger and actually sign the dotted line,
yep.
That's where the bottleneck is in that fear or that uncertainty. But
yeah.
So that would be my personal.
Roscoe, what I would suggest, mate, is book in for a discovery call because we can actually run through your scenario. I'm not kidding. Book in a discovery call, mate, australianpropertyscout.com.au. Get on there. The reason for it is because you haven't given us heaps of detail as to how much you've got to play with and what you're trying to achieve. So, mate, if you got, $1 million and you're saying three or four properties and you're just wanting to pick up a couple of bread and butters to start, like the thing you can always do, and you know this as well as I know, mate, it's pre-approvals can be a bit of a bugger to get organized and to get together. I love getting multiple pre-approvals at once because I hate, the process and everything, how long it takes with the banks. The way I would probably run it, and that's why I'm saying get in touch first and have a chat about your scenario so you can actually assess where you're at. Because, it's not for everyone. And starting out, if you've never done property before or done very little, it definitely isn't advisable to do like three or four deals in one hit. I have no problem helping people doing doubles at once if they're someone that's got a little bit of a tolerance for risk on it as well, because I know the quality of the way that we run process and everything as well. It's completely fine to go through and do it if you're being handheld and run the same way. If you're out there and doing it by yourself, it's one of those things where you would definitely take your time and knock one over first, get the taste for it and keep it rolling. You use someone that can execute at a high level for you, then you could potentially get two pre-approvals at once, execute on the first deal, get the taste, get the success, feel the victory on it, and then you've already got that second pre-approval in your hands. So, it's the same amount of work most of the time to get the double done. So then if you're feeling super confident, you don't have to then go back and go through that entire process again to get another pre-approval. So you can execute on one, ready to go, execute on the other, if you're very happy with the process. And if you're not, or if you're like a little bit timid after that first one, then you can just let that second pre-out lapse out.
Yep. Yep. Okay. I think that was a pretty good answer.
That's cool.
Roscoe, hopefully you're happy with that.
Thank you, mate.
I'd be interested to see what his business is. And again, you don't know how much money he's got from
exactly.
It. So is it even possible to do three or four deals?
That's very true. And that's why I think it's very relevant to send through guys. Probably if you're wanting more detailed response and maybe a bit more of an exact response on what we would do, probably send through a little bit more detail on what you're looking for so we can try and answer to the point.
Actually, that's a good point. So people that are writing in, please do try and give us a bit more detail, a little bit of a snapshot as to your background of where you're at. How much money do you actually have? What properties do you have?
Yep.
Then we'll be able to formulate, the master will be able to formulate a better answer. Even though you're doing really well so far.
Is Tommy throwing in the master over there? Throwing in some
I think he is. But the next question, Kylie Ann. Usually is a Kerry Ann.
Kerry Ann Kennelly or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if she's tuning in.
Maybe she's doing a bit of incognito.
Oh, okay.
Throwing us off.
Maybe. Maybe.
You never know.
She's a big fan of yours.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Sammy. I used to love hearing you on the SBI show.
Okay.
You were on there quite a few times.
Thank
you.
I appreciate it. I love the SBI show. It's great.
I'm over the moon. You're providing me weekly content. She loves hearing from you weekly.
She loves it. How good is that? Thank you very much, Kylie.
She says, I've got two properties in my portfolio. I'm negatively geared.
Ooh.
Oof. Actually, we need We need a little sound bite. Negatively
geared. Blue chip. Just throw the hatchet in there. Nah, sorry, sorry. We shouldn't.
Hold on. No, we're not making fun of her, but just from a...
Oh, no. It was a bit late.
Was that a bit of a burn for Kylie Anne? No, we love all the listeners.
It was a
listeners.
Burn for the strategy.
Yeah, it's not for Kylie Anne.
You've
She's
got
not.
To remember interest rates have done a dash at the moment.
Yes.
So there's a lot of properties that were neutral or slightly positive and now have gone the other way.
Exactly. So this is nothing.
But we're here to try and help.
And also, I think the important point is to understand when you're investing in the, don't take it personally. It's not a reflection of you.
Yep.
So I've had plenty of really dud properties.
And I've made mistakes.
Yeah,
100%.
You all made mistakes.
My first one, negatively geared, mate. I understand the pain.
So she says, I've got two properties in my portfolio. I'm negatively geared and it's not working out for me. I want to know what the fastest way to change from negative to positive. And selling now seems like such a defeat and such a headache.
Ooh,
so what?
Big one.
Yeah. I mean, again, not knowing all the info, but.
Yes. So this is a real tricky one because it depends on the market that she's in. It depends on the LVRs. How long ago did she buy? Has she got a huge amount of debt or has she got a huge amount of capital tied up in it? Like, has that property already done its run? I know this is a topic we're going to, you know, cover off in not too distant future is the exit strategy because it's super important. This is a tricky one again because we don't know how far negative. Like, are we talking?
Let's
we talking
just say she's 20
grand,
10 grand
per
each.
Property.
Yeah, per property.
Yep. So again, is she interest only or is she principal and interest? It's a pretty easy fix to try and like balance out at least maybe.
Let's just
half
say she's interest only.
Okay, she's interest only. Okay, she's in a bit of a tight pickle. Again, another scenario thing. And this is why I'm sorry, Kylie, it's a little bit hard to answer this one directly on it because it really comes down to your income position as well.
Let's make some assumptions. 20K okay. total. She's on $88,000. Yeah, average Australian income.
Okay. That's pretty brutal on that amount because that's like we're talking over a quarter of her salary, her pre-tax salary, over a quarter of it that you have to pay for with after-tax dollars.
So do you hold it?
You can write off. This is where it comes in depending on the location. So if you strongly believe and feel free, Kylie Anders, to direct message us, you know, either on Australian Property Scout, you know, at Australian Property Scout on socials, feel free to direct messages on this with maybe locations if you want a little bit of advice on it as well because that is the big thing that weighs into the equation. If it's in an area that we believe has still got good potential for growth, even if you just carry it maybe for another year or two or something like that to try and maximize that market's growth, then I think it's worth holding. If it's in an area that we think is exposed, potentially overvalued, you know, house prices to income ratios are way out of balance and it's essentially a very unaffordable market. In other words, it may come back at, you know, a chunk. That would be what I would be really, really wary of. So if you're in those scenarios and potentially in those locations and you don't think you're going to have continued growth anytime soon and that thing's just going to keep bleeding you, at that income level, I would be looking at, well, which is the best one to keep and which is the best one to potentially get rid of. The other thing to weigh in, again, location dependent, is there something else I can do to this property or condition wise, is there something I can do to this property to force a greater yield? Because, you know, if you can do a cosmetic facelift, and a lot of the time a cosmetic facelift can go a long way to changing, again, we're all spitballing here because we don't know values or rents or whatever they are. But if you can get your rents up by $100 a week per property, that halves your negative cash flow, literally to 10 grand, a lot more manageable for you on your income there. So I think that's probably the big things to weigh into the equation. You know, what's the exposure here? What are the markets that we're in? How much further do we think it's really going to go? Or is it potentially even going to come back? The big one that I threw at you a couple of episodes ago was the velocity of money, you know, both from a debt and an income and an equity position in it as well. If we were to sell it off or sell one of them off, what could we do with the debt? What could we do with the equity? Could we put you into a better market that's going to have better growth and better cash flows to allow you to continue to invest? That's how I assess, personally, that's how I assess every property in my portfolio. And even with my clients that hit that serviceability wall, I assess the portfolio, has something maxed out what is the velocity of money of the debt and the equity position of that property? If it's still growing and they've maxed out the serviceability, you don't want to sell prematurely and miss out on 50, 100 grand's worth yes. of growth. Right? So you don't want to jump the gun on that.
Which a lot of people in Southeast Queensland who are sitting on properties that were flat for so long in the markets that we're buying in, within 12 months, those properties increased by over 100 grand. Yeah, I mean, that would they got out the wrong time. Yeah. They didn't hold on for that little bit longer.
Yeah, they had that little spike or even sold before the spike sort of thing as well, especially with COVID. Was a lot of
so it's about being educated. You really got to know the market, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's a big thing. How well do you know your market? Make the call based on that. Is it going to keep growing? Is it going to go backwards? Is there something you can do to drive an increased yield? Even things like if you're in the right state, in the right council, can you add potentially a secondary dwelling to it, you know, for a certain amount of money that potentially the debt on that, but then the rent versus the debt on the secondary dwelling could maybe get you 10 grand a year.
Could turn it around.
100%. So these are the things you got to weigh up on that. And unfortunately, without having, you know, I guess specific addresses and specific locations, a little bit hard for me to, you know, crunch that properly. But they're the things I'd really look at doing. What else can you maybe crunch on to save?
I think we should do a podcast on negative gearing.
Tommy, can I get another update on our thoughts on that? And that's on the topic, not the idea of the podcast. No. I think is good, but the
for actual, people yes yeah, for people strategy, to understand strategy, yes to understand that, don't you think? I think people because even still now on some of the discovery calls, people are wanting to do that. If they're on really good income, they still think that that's the general way to do it. So I think,
mate, we definitely need to do a potty on that coming up. And I think we're going to have to make that sooner rather than later, because it's one of those things where even now, you know, people think it's just something they've got to cop. And yeah, even if you can get in the current market and you buy a nice property, even get it neutrally, slightly positively geared and be in that right location as opposed to something just because we're in a higher interest rate environment, it needs to be 10, 15 negative.
So, now with Kylie Ann, just before we wrap that up, because the last comment makes me, I can feel her pain in that when she says it feels like such a defeat and such a headache. The psychology behind that and being in that situation, I mean, you've obviously do a lot of strategy sessions with a whole bunch of clients and you come across this. What advice would you give to someone? I know we spoke about the mindset of this. You've got to be prepared to ride this out.
Yeah.
But what can we do to help Kylie Ann turn that around and empower her to make some really clear decisions without the defeatist lens that might jade her ability to make the right decision?
This is where it comes in. Exactly like I said, you've got to assess the properties. It's making an educated decision on what's there.
No emotion.
No emotion. So we've had clients that build out, that have had come to me and they've built out terrible, terrible portfolios. And I'm not going to hide the fact it was through other buyer's agents that has loaded them up with horseshit units in these subpar markets.
Why don't you tell us how you really feel about those?
And they racked up, man, they racked up like a fair number of these properties and they're massive handbrakes. And on paper, they were, you know, very high yielding assets, but in, you know, on face value as a gross value, they looked very high. But in reality, they were bleeding these guys. And then when interest rates went completely the other way, they were like massively bleeding these guys. And then when interest rates increased and they said to me, look, I don't want to sell these if I can avoid it at all costs. I don't want to sell these properties. I'm like, that's okay, mate. No pressure for me at all. And then we got to a point where we had done I think we had done one deal and then a couple of interest rates rises. I'm thinking of this one client in particular. Interest rates started doing their climbing and the broker said to him, mate, with all these other ones you're holding, you're too negatively geared across these things. Like if you want to move forward, he actually just said, mate, you got to stop, like you can't do anything else. He's like, mate, I don't want to stop. He's in his 50s, retirement is close and he's loaded up with a portfolio of over like a dozen of these very, very poorly performing units. And so he came back to me, he goes, what do I do? And I go, well, mate, we've got to crunch these things and see what has the potential to still grow and what's in a market that, like, if we're dead honest with it, we don't see moving for the next 5 to 10 years. And we made that decision, you know, together and we kind of worked through it. And yeah, obviously it's not financial advice what I work through with people at all. It's running through scenarios of you're stuck if you do want to keep moving. These are the actions you can take to go to a next level. And he had to sell some of those properties at losses for what he paid for them, plus a BA fee, plus stamps and all the rest of it. He's actually losing money on those deals to cash out of them. But the velocity of money and what is changing and what it allowed him to do, he sold out of two of them. We were literally able to get him, turn him into a really, really strong, high-yielding bread-and-butter deal and a nice, strong good little regional hub that's priming up for a nice strong run. And they were able to get him another one over in Perth, man. That's a little, it's an absolute cracker as well. Really strong yield on it, bread and butter. And it's actually allowed his portfolio, because he's tapped those two average ones out, brought these two new ones in. He's able to go for one more, and then we're probably going to have to reassess the portfolio. But those two deals that he sold, they were in stagnating markets that were not going to do anything. In our both of our opinions, we assessed it. We crunched everything we could. Very, very unlikely to still have a good run, you know, in the future. And so it's like, is it worth holding it just for the sake of it? You know, what if in 5-10 years or whatever, they actually come back even more or have just plateaued and done nothing, when you could have gone and taken that money, that equity, that debt, put it in a different market that's priming up for a cycle that has all the indicators pointing to it, with heaps better yields and everything else attached to it that makes it such a better investment. And obviously saw logic in that and went down that path.
That's awesome.
So that's what you got to do. I know it's a hard one. It looks like defeat, but sometimes you got to do these things that move you forward, because otherwise you could be sitting here in 10 years going, shit, I wish I had.
So take the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
So Kylie Ann, there is, obviously there's hope there. 100%.
Yep. And thank you for writing in and being raw.
That was awesome.
It's tough, you know, admitting these things when mistakes happen on it as well. I know it's tough. So thank you very much for honesty.
Awesome. All right.
All right.
Is that one for you?
I'm up next. Anonymous. Come on, Anonymous.
Anonymous. Come on.
Come on, mate.
Surely.
Is that a name? Imagine being called like Anonymous. Smith. Imagine Anonymous Smith. It's your name, mate. Come on, mate. Don't muck around.
Surely.
Anyway. From Mr. Anonymous Smith. Boys, I'd love to know, are there any type of properties out there that you purely and simply would never consider to buy? Jimmy, I'll let you start, mate.
Well, personally, there's a couple of distinctive properties that I don't like, and yep. I think we've spoken about them, touched on them before, mm-hmm. but I've never really liked apartments purely because you get caught out on the strata.
Yeah.
And the supply and demand, there's just, you generally speaking, there is an oversupply of a lot of apartments, and it's very hard to distinguish your apartment from other apartments.
Yep.
Especially if you're buying, I hate buying off the plan. Mm-hmm. I've never done it and I wouldn't do it. So Anonymous, I would personally say do not buy off the plan. Generally, you're buying well in advance of the completion date.
The one thing I'll say on that, are we talking off the plan units?
Off the plan units.
Okay, off the plan units. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You're saying off the plan.
Yeah, I'll let you finish.
Sorry.
No, it's okay, mate.
Gee, he just.
Do you want me to jump in why then? Do you want me to tell you why?
Why?
Because off the plan land, there are times where you can make very good money on that. And that's why I was putting a little caveat. Right. I agree with you completely. Good. Off the plan units, you'd be very, very careful.
I think you're right.
But off the plan land, both myself and I know other clients that have done very, very well off it as well.
I think you got to be really, you got to have your numbers spot on. Because essentially, if you're buying, all right, well, that leads me to the next one then.
Okay.
So let's talk off the plan units. Off the plan units,
done. Off the table.
They're off the
table. See you later.
See you later. But even in units in general, right? Because of the strata, you get caught out, hard to
almost
really.
Almost always inferior growth as well.
Yep.
100%. Honestly, almost always inferior 100%. Growth. I know there's some that outperform the averages. Like I witnessed that with my Wollongong unit. You know, it did 90.
That was your number one, wasn't it?
It was, and it did 90 something percent growth before I traded her in, which was exceptional. But it was also it was a tightly held market in that spot. And also, like I look at them, and since then, all the houses in that area of Wollongong in the last little COVID boom have like doubled again, and the units gone up like 100 grand.
Yeah.
So it's like it's I feel like it's becoming a time where like again it's getting the gap is getting bigger and bigger.
Yep.
Sorry.
Second one.
Yep.
Which I know that you will counter in a bit with your caveat.
Ooh.
But personally, from my own knowledge base,
yep.
the limited knowledge base that I do have in terms of house and land package type properties, I personally don't back my ability to buy those kind of deals because I see them as end of the line products.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're really clear on the actual estate and knowing what the rollout is and where you are buying in that,
mm-hmm.
I find it really difficult to get the value. Look, he's so quick to jump. He wants to
go. No, Matt, I'm going to agree with you. Okay.
I thought you would say, I'm just going to preempt what you're going to say.
Please.
That
put
if
words
you pick,
in my mouth.
if you picked the right block off market in the right area and you can arbitrage that and make on the way in there, but I personally, with the risk profile, I think there's easier ways to make money.
Can I ask you something? from memory, you've lost money on a house on land before, haven't you?
No.
You haven't?
No, I haven't.
You didn't lose money on that one? You kept it?
The one in Ormo?
Yeah.
Well, no, I bought it as an existing house. Okay. It burnt down.
What? You but
he's
it
laughing
before?
At. He's
hey, oh, you owned it before?
It took me ages to burn it down, I tell you. It took no, I remember the agent.
What's your last
the
name?
Agent. Oh, wow. He's gone. Can we play that sound? There's got to be actually a buzzer, like a red card sort of yellow.
That was good.
That's a joke.
Yeah,
that's
a joke. That was a snap. Please. So
I remember the agent calling me up and going, I've got some really bad news.
You reckon?
I'm like, your house is burnt down. I went, is everyone okay? Because it was rented out.
Yeah,
as soon as you said everyone was fine, I was like, okay, cool. She was so upset. I was why are you so
upset? Yeah, it's an investment. So it's all good.
It's all good.
Mad new home.
It's all good. That did take me a long time to rebuild it because I was just being really lazy.
Was insurance covering you with it though?
They were, but it was quite an obscure block. Mm. Wasn't a nice rectangular block.
Okay.
So the standard spec homes couldn't really fit on it.
Right.
And that was the first investment property I bought when I was like 23 and I didn't know what I was doing. So it was just, wasn't a great experience.
Yeah, it was tough.
But I would have just thought, with big estates that are doing house and land packages, you are buying the typical end of the line product. Yeah, yeah. So unless the market is moving, very difficult for you to manipulate or change that property to create the extra value straight away.
Yep.
That's why I don't like it.
I agree with you, man, completely. So like so often with your house and lands, they're either sold off by project marketers or they're sold off, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, financial planners, brokers.
Well, certain ones would be. I mean, that's just the facts, right?
There's a lot of them that are good out there and there's a lot of them you got to be extremely wary of for selling you things like house and land packages because there can be massive commissions.
Who's taking a clip?
Exactly. So when you're buying that end retail product of a house and land package, that is where you've got to be extremely careful. And you have to do your due diligence. This is where so many people get burnt with it. And I actually am a big advocate against this of anyone really being able to, especially financial planners or accountants or brokers or anything being able to sell that thing. And have a comm built into it. I don't like that. Let me just finish for one sec here. Is what I was going to say with like what you're saying about I would go against it. I wouldn't, Matt, because I don't agree with house and lands. What I agree with is if you are very early in a big estate, or not even in a big estate, if you're early in a cycle and you can buy some land before it's registered, a lot of the time you can get it a lot cheaper than what it would be if it was registered and ready to build.
Nice.
And if you're, especially if you're buying in a bit of a flatter market, like you look at the other one that I did at the 133, like that was, okay, it wasn't off the plan, but that was, that was vacant land. There was another block that I bought only a few years ago, back in 2019. That was land off the plan. We bought pretty well a whole street through Australian Property Scout. We kind of bought an entire street for investment off the plan. It was about 9 months away, and we did very, very well on it. But you have to time the market well with them as well. But if you time the market well and you're confident the market's going to be rising, you can make good money out of them. But it's not for the intro investor. Like it's just, you need to really know your market, know what you're doing, know your numbers. Because they can be tricky. You can get those things wrong. So it's not for the early investor, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's why I think I couldn't personally. Mm. I wouldn't feel as comfortable as someone like you.
Yeah, fair enough.
Who've got runs on the board, and I think you said it on the other podcast about knowing your numbers and being a market expert in that location, because a mistake like that can really put you back, right?
Definitely.
So, I've got another question actually.
Hang on, is there anything else?
That's what did you. That was it. That was the question from, was there any other properties that you wouldn't consider to buy? Actually.
Yeah. So the other big ones you got to look at as well are like your service departments and your sub 50 square meter apartments. So they're the big ones you got to be really, really careful of. You got to look at like what strata is involved. Like what you're saying with units, off the plan units and units in general, you got to be really careful what someone's putting in there and putting on that as well. They're the really big thing, like in terms of a strata rate, an ongoing strata rate, because you can almost never negotiate that back down. So don't be naive, like add that to your baseline numbers, because that's what it's going to cost you. I can almost guarantee you it's going to hurt, because they do almost every time.
Just on service departments.
Yeah.
A lot of people like service departments because they think it's got a really strong yield.
Yeah.
Obviously they're not a growth play.
Mm.
But is this just a case of an opportunity cost that you might be making a stronger yield, but the property's actually not going to perform in the long run. There's not going to be any growth. So would you rather keep it there for that smaller yield and not be exposed to the growth, or would you just put in another market?
I put it in another market, mate. Yeah. I wouldn't even bother with it.
So that's what I'm saying. Some people are going to be thinking that.
Well, they're too hard to finance. When something's too hard to finance, they're too hard to resell. And when they're too hard to resell, you're never going to be able to get premiums. And when growth rips through a market, like growth is ultimately what makes you wealthy, right? A lot of people mistake me for someone who's purely driven by cash flow. I'm not. I love creating cash flow in growth markets, but I don't like carrying a negatively geared asset just for growth. I strongly believe you can get both out of the same asset. I think it's exactly the same thing with that. Like you're gonna get inferior growth, and realistically, you're probably gonna get inferior cash flow compared to something else you'd be able to source out there as well.
Okay.
One big thing too, just cutting in on that too, with the off the plan stuff. Easiest thing to do when you're looking at this as a lesson for everyone out there, because I know a lot of first timers think it's a smart thing to do or the right thing to do to go down that off the plan path. Have a look at what established properties are selling for in that area. Make sure, like, that's where you need to see that price disparity, because once that property settles, like, that's what it's going to be worth. Mm. Or you have a tenant in there, or you live in there for 12 months, like she's dropping a tad. So
could you ask if you get referred by a financial planner to buy something, tell them to show you which property they have bought in that estate?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because invariably they probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, 100%.
Or to say, I want to see what contract have you got to really see where their intentions are. Yeah. Which is a shame, really. That really pisses me off because –
yeah.
I mean, any financial industry is littered with people trying to rip you off, right?
Yeah. The issue I have with it is that they are the only industry and practitioners in the country that can call themselves, like, they can give financial advice, and there's a portion of them out there that kind of are taking advantage of that. I don't understand how that isn't regulated. I don't know if it is put in somewhere in contracts or something that it is there, and it's because it's a 50-page contract, the client doesn't read it or whatever. But I feel like it should be like proper disclosure around that as well. By the way, don't get me wrong. I think there's plenty of good financial planners out there that are out there doing things for the right reasons.
Of course.
I think you just got to be very, very wary when it comes to being recommended property by one of them as to, you know, what is the actual, what's the actual incentive behind it as well.
It's a healthy bit of skepticism, isn't it?
Yep.
With anything, like, look through the detail, look through the data, look at the numbers,
yep,
and then make a calculated decision.
You want me to give you a real life example of the worst shit I've witnessed in that space?
Yep.
Out in Ipswich, I was buying very heavily for clients 2019, 2020. and there was several large estates that now had become kind of like more infill because, you know, 15 years had gone by and they'd kind of been built around and all the rest of it. And they were good little, they were decent little pockets. A huge amount of people had been referred and recommended by those types of guys to buy these off the plan purchases in there. They were selling for, they bought them for between 400 to 420 as an average. In 2007 to 2008, I was buying them in 2019 and 2020 for, I never paid over $300,000 for one of them. I would have bought about 20 of them for myself and clients.
So just say that again. In 2008?
2007, 2008, there were investors buying them at 400 to 420,000, depending on the size of the house, depending on the size of the block. And we were buying them on average between 280 and $300,000.
Those same properties 12 years later.
Yep. That's what was the real light bulb moment when I just realized, holy shit, how did they get away with that? You know what I mean? Like, and they're never worth that when they bought it. They were already worth, you know, 40 grand less than what they paid at the time. Yeah, wow. And then the market just slipped back and back and back because they also bought at the peak of the Brizzy boom.
Yeah.
For one, they bought a brand new product off the plan, overpaid for it. By the time they settled, like, the market had come back. And it's only until recently, and like, it was very good timing for what I did with a lot of my guys because, like, now we're literally two, three years on, and most of those properties are now worth 500,000 plus. And that when we bought them, they were renting for 350. Now most of the rents are 480 to 500 plus. So, like, the returns now have been excellent. And obviously timing those markets was critical of getting back in before that upswing came. But I honestly felt really bad. Like, I was doing what I had to do for my clients to get the best results for those that were paying me, but I felt really bad for those guys on the other end of the spectrum. And I remember clearly there was one guy, I bought multiple of these direct from owners. I contacted owners and actually bought them direct, so they were saving agents commissions and stuff like that as well, so I wasn't killing them as much. But yeah, man, I remember just like chatting to him. He just can't help but feel so sorry for him for where they are, you know, over a decade later, losing over $100,000 for something.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. But he's, man, he's, honestly, I see it all over the country. This is one example of where I've seen it, where I've witnessed it.
Well, it's a serious game.
It is.
Yes, you either get yourself educated or find someone who is to help you.
Yep. Leverage that expertise.
How are we going for time, Tommy? We got one more to go? Last one.
Here we go.
Unless you've got something else. But I think this would be a good one.
Okay.
For you.
Wow.
From Davo.
Big Davo. Go, little Davo. Here we
go. G'day, boys. The podcast is awesome.
Oh, thank you.
That's a credit to you.
Thanks, Davo.
Having a convo. Well, you can tell Davo is a real.
He's an Aussie bloke.
Yeah.
He's potentially a battler, and I love him already. Thank you, Davo, mate.
Having a convo with a mate the other day. We were talking about the biggest myths in property. I want to know, what are the most annoying things you hate hearing in the industry that's a load of rubbish? I think you actually touched on some of them just then.
Yeah, so that's the biggest ones. Obviously, like there's some huge ones within that. The old blue chip never goes down. Blue chip only has that long-term growth. And to be honest, all the bullshit that goes with all the talk around blue chip, I am a big advocate of the fact that you don't need to buy an asset for $1 million that rents for $500 a week and costs you $30,000 a year to hold just to achieve some decent capital growth.
Some arguments of that would be that the rental wouldn't be $500. So what would you say?
It depends on the area and depends what you're buying. But for the most part, when you're talking blue chip, like if you're talking and you're buying those high, because when we're talking blue chip, we're talking exclusive areas, right? So that $1 million depends on the market that you're in. So if we're talking $1 million on Bondi Beach, you're probably getting $500, maybe $600 a week rent. All right, mate, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's say $600 a week rent, okay? And then how much is your strata on top of that?
Yes, strata, blue chip, right? Strata.
Bang. You know, if you want that sort of asset, you're going to cop that. Now, what I witnessed after GFC when I was doing all my research and you know, talking 09, 2010, 11, what I saw a huge amount of when I used to really track, and I found this really interesting, because down in the Southern Highlands, there was a suburb called Burradoo, and it was the longest days on market in the country, and it was sitting at about 3.5 years. It was like 1,000 days. It was something ludicrous. I remember seeing it going, holy shit, how is Burradoo? Because it is the most exclusive area in the Highlands. It's the most blue chip. Like, man, it's ritzy as doctors, you know, all these people live down there. Beautiful spot. Absolutely loved it. Like, I aspired when I lived down there, I aspired to live in Burradoo. But what happens is, like, when so often, and this obviously it changes in all these different markets, but what happens is people will buy into these markets and markets will peak out and everything. You can make great money in them when the growth comes through. When the markets turn, like, there aren't as many people to buy in those markets because they're so expensive. The easiest thing to cut when things get really hard is the cost of living. The biggest one's either the mortgage or the rent. So a lot of people will move out of those areas into the more affordable areas just to be able to survive. And people say that doesn't happen because in the affluent areas, the money isn't as big an issue. But how many people do we know that always try and proclaim that they make so much more than they do and all of this and all of that? And the simple fact is, when interest rates on $1 million loan go from a 2% fixed and rolls off from your fixed and goes to a, you know, and especially if it's interest only and rolls off to a 6-7% P&I,
it's gonna hurt.
It's gonna hurt. You know, and that's where those areas, they feel pain, they'll come back, and then they'll plateau and they sit in those periods. And that's why I really remember, sorry, I should have elaborated a little more. Burradoo always sat in the top. It always fascinated me because of that. But I always remember seeing the top five was like, I can't even remember exactly, but it was like, there was a couple of Northern Beaches suburbs and there was a couple of, like, I don't know, it was like a Double Bay or a Coogee or something. There was those really expensive, you know, sought after areas, longest days on market in the country.
So why did it sell eventually?
What's that?
That property that was on the market for that long?
No. Mate, that was the average days on market for the suburb.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm saying, man. So it's like a suburb average of what sits on the market for that long.
That's insane.
Man, they're very, very hard to hold those assets. Yep. And they're those emotional assets that people want to try and hold on because of the prestige of owning in those markets. Mm. Man, if you're a baller and you've got deep pockets, it can work. It can work for those guys, right? But the average you know, Australian and the average, even I honestly would say anyone making less than 250 a year, they are not the right property to invest in because they will bleed you too much when you get to that point. Yeah, the whole idea of buying 2, 3, 4 of these blue chip assets and then after, you know, 30, 20 years, whatever, you sell off 2 to pay the other 2 out. It doesn't work because the 2 that you pay out, if they're the same style of asset, they're low yielding. Why would you want to hold those as your 2 holds? Like if anything, even just that part of the strategy is broken. Yeah, man, it's just, I think because I've dealt with negative cash flow, and again, by the way, I think on this potty, I think negative cash flow is going to start becoming a dirty word because I don't like it. And really, blue chip negative cash flow go hand in hand. You know, at the moment, the only areas that are still sticking in the current interest rate environment that we're at, the only areas that are still sticking above average and still just sticking positive at the moment are your blue collar and your mortgage belt areas because of the affordability that's there. And there's actually a really big drive on the rental side there too. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be some drive on the rental side in that blue chip space as well. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But yeah, man, like it's one of those markets when those interest rates go up, unaffordability is already through the roof. How do you deal with it? You know, how do you cope with it? There's a lot of people overstretch themselves in those markets.
Well, I think that's probably the biggest one, isn't it? Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah,
that was really valid. I mean, that was some gold.
Yeah. So sorry, what was it? I'll go back over the question. I got a little carried.
Well, just any of the biggest myths. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different myths. I mean, one of the biggest myths I find is that you should buy where you like. You know, you need to buy a property that you can see it.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, well, by you driving past it, how does that change the value of the property or the yield or the growth potential? Mm. What comfort do you get from looking at the property at the front? Yes, you might be able to renovate or do a little bit here or there.
Yeah.
But there's no use saving $5,000 on a reno or fixing a toilet or doing that if you're missing out on 50, 100 grand of growth in an area.
In different market.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the biggest one, I know we're not talking about shares, but generally speaking, what really triggers for people, because a lot of people have superannuation and your superannuation is invested in, you know, funds.
Yep.
It's like, well, name a company that's invested in, like BHB. And it's like, well, when's the last time you went to BHB's head office?
Yeah, it's true.
You don't.
Very true.
So why would you do the same thing with property?
Yeah. Very good point, mate. Well done. Nice little, I don't even know how many episodes. I feel like we're almost a dirty dozen in here, man. That's the first bit of valuable info.
Thank you.
I really appreciate
it. Do we have a little ding or something? What's like a little wind clap. I think there's a clap. Surely there's got a...
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Thank Tommy.
You guys. Wow.
That was into you. I've got, actually, if we've got quick. Time, wow. I just want to say one more. How long are we at? We've got 5 minutes to go.
5 minutes.
This is actually one I've been wanting to ask you. And it's funny, I haven't had the time because normally you're talking, but I haven't.
Mate, you're on fire today. What happened? You had a bit of chili in your kebab or something before you came over here. Big boy.
Oh, he's gone the kebab. He's gone the, don't forget who I am.
Mate, give me some of your water, I'm thirsty.
Is the name, why did you come up with the name Scouting Australia Podcast?
Ooh, that's a big one. That's a big one, mate.
I've been wondering.
You've been holding up your sleeve for
a lot of people have been asking, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think your mum wrote in, she asked.
Yep, that was about it.
Yeah, Morgan's. one. Tommy's been asking.
the important people, eh? It's been all the people.
It's been a pretty short list, to be fair.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
No, but a lot of people, in all seriousness, because obviously the business is Australian Property Scout.
Yes.
So, curious.
Look, I know, mate, a few people have been writing, like, why not just go on like APS podcast or Australian Property Scout podcast or whatnot. I didn't start the podcast for the business, right? Like the whole idea of the podcast is like a separate way of giving back from what I do. So I run a business, obviously buyer's agency, we go source property for people, all the rest of it. The podcast is supposed to be a different avenue to be able to give back as much as we can to people. And when you pull it apart, really, the way I look at it is property has given me so much. Like I came from, as you know, very, very humble beginnings, kind of almost like taught myself like a bachelor's of property with all the content I consumed and all that. And this is really my way of kind of teaching that and giving that back to people to help other people who are in similar positions learn and gain an understanding and get the confidence to go out there and do this stuff. Because people can be very overwhelmed in the very early pieces and starting out and whatnot. A lot of times it's very conflicting information, and pretty much, man, this is just my way of giving back and delivering how I see it, how it worked for me. yeah, and running through
it. Like I love that. And you know what? When I saw the Scouting Australia, any connection? Because obviously Scouting Australia, what you're, you know, researching, you're looking at different things. But you know, when you look at it, were you a Boy Scout? You got that Boy Scout vibe.
Oh, mate, you would know. You would know. I've seen your little badges on the wall. Oh, look, I was not. I was not a Boy Scout. Can confirm, am not a Boy Scout.
Not that there's anything wrong with that for our listeners out there, because there are many great institutions that do offer that. But the premise of a Boy Scout is, or any scout, is learning different facets of something.
Yeah.
So Scouting Australia, apart from looking and researching, and but there's so many different facets of property. So is that a, is that, has that got anything to do with it?
Look, it doesn't. But I guess in a way, when you put it like that, it, like it, that never came into it, I guess. But when you put it like that, like there are so many different avenues and so many different things relating to and involved in property to be successful at it. And this is why I think I love it, because it's mate, it doesn't matter if you're out there trying to buy your first home or your dream home or building a small portfolio that's going to allow you to get into your dream home, or mate, if you want to bloody go to the moon with Elon and build a $1 million passive income portfolio, like it's there's so many different facets to it to get you to that level, whichever level of those it is, because everyone's at different learning points and different levels of ability and whatnot as well. So it's trying to, I guess, just like equip everyone and empower everyone as much as they can to learn these little traits and everything that's involved with it. Yeah, man. So it's pretty much just comes down to that.
Mate, I love it. I love it. Scouting Australia.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you, buddy.
Now, Tommy, how long have we gone now? 50 minutes?
Tommy, mate, I was going to roast you. You made us ditch our other ep that I had all lined up, all prepped up. But, mate, this has been good.
I like that.
And I've enjoyed this. It's been good. I think we can make this a bit of a monthly segment, the old Q&A. It's been good.
And also, I think diving a little bit deeper into certain case studies. What do you reckon of that?
Yes. Yeah.
Like these little ones. I know you got into a couple of people for not putting them up as much detail as you'd like.
Yes, Shazza.
So we want more detail. Lady. We want more detail.
Give me more detail, I can give you a bit extra in return.
Now, don't forget.
Do you remember the old, sorry, I'm going to cut you off here, the old Triple S Pulsar? The old Triple S Pulsar?
Yeah, Turbo.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Turbo. Strategy Sessions with Sam at Triple S.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Too far?
No, yeah, probably too far. You should have been at Scouts.
What a head.
I'm just curious about our numbers for the, because there have been people writing in.
Yeah, I
know. Looking forward to the worm.
We're halfway to the worm.
Looking forward to the slug. Looking forward to the windmill.
The windmill. We're a long way from the windmill.
We are a long way.
We're 20-1 odds there. Okay. But mate, apparently we are halfway to the worm.
Now, if people want to see the windmill, what do they do?
Either the windmill or the worm.
Yeah, you got to subscribe, right?
You send me a direct message. I'm on OnlyFans. It's it's $50 for a windmill shot. But in all seriousness, guys, look, we've been getting some great feedback, great response. We are quite literally halfway to the worm. I need you guys to all send in. Please leave us a review. I want to know what you're thinking. If you're loving it, leave us a 5-star. If you're not, don't leave us a review. Just go somewhere else, would you? But
give a bad review to a different podcast.
To a different podcast. Yeah, we'd appreciate that in a big way. But yeah, guys, if you could please, obviously, on all your favorite platforms, you could leave us a 5-star review. Let us know what you're thinking. Any questions, as always, guys, the easiest way, send a direct message into us at our socials, which obviously is at Australian Property Scout. Or yeah, guys, if you need to reach out for anything in particular, if you want to have a discovery session with the man, the myth, not the legend, but the man and the myth and the chili kebab eater, bloody Jimmy over here, visit www.australianpropertyscout.com.au. Book in for a discovery call. Get amongst it. And yeah, anything else you want to throw in, mate?
Mate, I can't wait to see you next week. Yeah.
Looking, mate, I think I know you think you're looking a bit fresh. I think you need a fresh haircut next week, and I'll be excited to see it.
I was going to say, you need to have a shave too.
I'm due for one.
It's a bit scruffy.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Okay. Try and,
buddy.
All right.
All right, guys.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks heaps. See you later.